I've been able to lean into how do I shape the way I practice as an engineer through Te Ao Māori, Mātauranga Māori, as I find out what that means to myself personally and professionally.
Kia ora mai tātou, nau mai hoki mai ki te kōna ipurangi a Māori in Engineering. Ko Elise Lysett ahau. I am Elise Lysett, your host. This episode of 26 of the Māori in Engineering podcast, we are joined by the awesome person that is Dr. Emily Arfoa. If you haven't come across Emily Arfoa and you're in the engineering industry, then oh my gosh, I'm excited for you. She is an iri of Ngāpuhi, Ngāti Maniapoto. She grew up in Kerikeri in the Mighty Tītai Tokirau and moved to Tāmaki Makaurau at 15 years of age, where she is based now. She is a Pōwhakarai director at Tactus Consultants Limited, a chartered environmental engineer with experience reaching far from academia, local government and consultancy spaces. Her heart work is clear and the mahi that she has done and is doing is intergenerational stuff. This episode she talks about her journey to date in the professional and personal capacity, her ambitions for the future within this industry, as well as some hard stuff too. Nō reira, enjoy e te whānau. Kia ora rā.
Whakataka te hau ki te iru. Whakataka te hau ki te tonga, kia mā kina kina ki uta, kia mā taratara ki tai. E hi ake ana te atākura, he teo, he huka, he hauhu, te hei wā mauri ora. Mauri ora.
Mauri ora.
Kia ora ohoa. Kia ora, Emily.
Kia ora. It is good to be here after talking about it for some time.
I'm very stoked and excited for this kōrero. Starting us off, like every episode, ko ai koe ihoa.
Kia ora. Ko ai tēnei. Ai, he uri tēnei no Ngāpuhi, Ngāti Maniapoto noki. Ai, i te poaki au i te tai tōkarau, nāinei kei Maraitai, kei Tāmaki Makaurau, a hau e noho ana. Ko Emily Arfoa tōku ingoa. I had so many thoughts around how I would open myself to that question, and I think that's part of this kōrero for today. It's a massive question, even though such a simple one around identity and who I am. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we first met, I think I had only just started learning my whakapapa and connecting with it. I have more information, but I'm still finding that personal connection to it. And so I think on the spot, I just stopped. I was like, oh, I panicked and didn't want to share everything because I still feel like I don't quite have the right to share that publicly. Mm-hmm. Well, not the right, but the comfort level. In different fora, it feels weird recording that sort of information, right? Like having it out in the ether when you don't know where it's going to go or who it's going to reach. Yeah, that was actually shorter than I even thought it was going to be. I think I panicked.
it is yours and it is precious and it is so thank you for sharing even that. Really appreciate that. And a lot. Aye. Where do you want to go to from there? I think that there's a lot of
Yeah. I guess that's linking with this kaupapa, this amazing kaupapa, Māori and engineering. You know, I didn't even talk to my roles, my workplace. I almost feel like we should start again. So on who am I, you know? I do identify myself as an engineer. It's one of those core parts of who I am. I practice in the water sector. I refer to myself as a water professional, a water practitioner, an engineer. I'm a director of my company, Tactus, with my business partner, Jack. I'm a board member at the Association of Consulting and Engineering New Zealand, ACE. So I think there's so many threads to my tapestry, even that question, trying to figure out what's right to share in each context can be challenging when I'm so strongly interweaving my personal self into my professional life and have the habit of telling everyone everything. So trying to figure out which story to share when. I think in this context, I'm really proud of what I'm doing with Jack at Tectus. You know, we're a consultancy, primarily in engineering, but also environmental and planning practice as well. And the idea of trying to weave together those elements of planning, the why are we trying to achieve this with engineering, that practical, how do we deliver it? It's front and foremost, almost at my, in my mind at the moment. Today, we've been trying to kind of frame how we celebrate an award I got, which feels incredibly self-centered. So those sorts of things are hard to go out there. It's not our culture to go out and say.
I think
how amazing.
Well, just getting onto that in terms of the award that you got, which award was it? You brought it in there.
Already interviewed this year, and Jensen, another colleague from SPIES, from our South Pacific Indigenous Engineering Students Days at the University of Auckland. We were all honoured this year with receiving a University of Auckland 40 Under 40 award. And it was announced yesterday, and as these things do, there's a flurry of activity around LinkedIn. And so I've been reflecting on how I acknowledge and thank everyone who's helped shape me into a position to achieve an award like that. I haven't posted anything yet, but I've been starting to draft something. And so that's why it's front of mind, and why I dropped it into the conversation.
Yeah, fair enough.
Unreasonably early in the conversation to start bragging about my achievements, but I guess this is a conversation about Māori and engineering, and you know, that's been SPIES right from those university days. It's actually it probably ties in nicely around that identity conversation, because back in those days, you know, there's this awesome photo that's popped up periodically. Troy found it, I think, and it's myself, Troy Brookbank, and Wharehuia Dixon at Māori Grad. Yeah, and you know, that's from the time when I was at university at SPIES, didn't know my whakapapa then, knew obviously that I was Māori, and always felt a little bit not quite enough in those spaces. So I had actually been reflecting on it when the photo popped up the first time. I was like, I'm actually really surprised almost that I even went to Māori Grad, because I didn't quite feel enough, you know? So it's like it's a tricky one. To reflect through the, you know, when those photos pop up again, celebrating the successes and achievements of other Māori in engineering, and then again most recently with this University of Auckland 40 Under 40, just scraping. Into the age category. I'm not trying to discredit the mahi that I'm doing.
You still got it, but
exactly. But you know, it's amazing to reflect on that journey that I've been on as a Māori wahine, like a wahine Māori in engineering, because it's a core, like I was reflecting on it because the write-ups are quite effusive. You know, you're supposed to be celebrating awesomeness, but it's not comfortable to do that. And I was reflecting on the journey that I've been on, because, you know, Te Ao Māori, connecting on what I know myself, learning from others, weaving it into practice, you know, that really is a core part of the way I'm trying to operate genuinely, even though I'm still trying to learn myself, find confidence in my own position and my own identity as a wahine Māori in engineering, as a wahine Māori full stop. To see that journey, because there was so, like, it was so much smaller part of my life then, and I'm actually quite pleased and proud that I was even there at that time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. First of all, Timata, thank you for sharing that. People listening, like, there are definitely going to be people who relate to that. Heck, I relate to that entirely. And second, congratulations, e whakanui a ki a koe for your award. That is amazing. And I hope you get to reflect on properly on where and what you've done and for the impacts that you have made to this industry, because they have been large and they've been mighty and they're going to continue, no pressure, to be large. So I really hope, and I get the discomfort of not wanting to talk about yourself, but heck, you deserve that. Thirdly, my question, which is kind of my role in this kōrero, of you were saying about being a wahine Māori in the industry, and reflecting on the photo at your Māori grad, where you went to Māori grad and you got yourself there, and understanding that that wasn't easy, and you also mentioned spies. Interested to know, I don't know, kind of how that journey was for you. You've touched on it, but how that journey was to you, for you through engineering while you were studying engineering at University of Auckland. What was that like? I suppose, like, how has that become such a big part of how you live your life now? Like, what were the kind of pulls and tugs within that?
It's a really good question, because I was reflecting on it too prior to today. Because I did engineering and arts. I did a conjoint degree. And
what was your arts in?
Part of it was because I did a geography major. The vision behind it was some elements of like human geography, and then understanding the natural world. I've always had an affinity to environmental outcomes. Through this journey of connecting to my taha Māori, to my Māori tanga, I've realised how comfortably connection to Atua Māori and to our tai ao really sits with me. It's been a part of me my whole life, and it's this new way of expressing it and connecting with it, which I love. But that was why I did geography in the arts degree. I felt like engineering had a real strong focus on modification for human benefit, but the geography enabled a way of understanding our natural world in and of its own intrinsic value. I would never have explained it like that at the time. But I also did the arts degree, so I could do Spanish papers. I did some English lit papers. There was a time at university, when I was still at high school, that I thought I might go on and do an English literature degree. You know, that was, I always had a mix of subjects through my schooling pathway, and that had been strongly encouraged by my mum, just to keep kind of both sides of my brain, to keep that creativity and inquisitiveness going, even though I did have quite a strong affinity to maths and sciences. So I do feel there was a point to this. So I do feel some regret, because at the time when I was thinking about what to study, knowing that I wanted to have something with elements of creativity and break up that like maths and science focus of an engineering degree. I think when we went through, I didn't have a general ed. There weren't the cross faculty papers that there are now as well. So I was kind of doing that for myself. I didn't do te reo. I didn't do Māori studies. There's such a feeling of regret now. But at the time, it was very much a paradigm of where will that get you? I felt like, and in the spaces and the circles I was in, it wasn't something that was seen as career advancing at the time. Well, that's my reflection anyway. And so I feel regret for that. But I think I also wasn't ready for it in terms of identity. Like, I have amazing parents. I've always known I was Māori. I wasn't out trying to find my biological whānau, because I have, you know, an amazing whānau. Mm-hmm. And so it was that identity stuff that I think I was a bit too young to lean into. I was all about, like, go to university, get a degree, get a good job, you know, all those things that are the expectation of you, I guess, at that time. And so I think my pathway in was, I did actually meet
Dr. Kepa Morgan, mm-hmm. early on at least, as a first year student at the university. I think encouraged to apply for scholarships, which has got me connected with Kepa. He introduced me to SPIES. So I kind of went along, and I think what was awesome there was finding like a community, even if I didn't feel like I necessarily fit in. I wasn't the only person in that space who I think had some discomfort around whether or not you were like proper spies or whatever. Like, no one, it was an internal, you know, I was projecting my own identity issues. It was never coming from the externality. It was a really tight unit. There was a space to study. There was opportunities for mentoring. And so I just found this really great community and support crew alongside the other friends that I made at university. And I think having that exposure, having the mentorship and Kepa's influence, I started to have more interest in trying to draw out what that is to myself, what that means in practice. But it still wasn't a huge part, I don't think, of my education. And I stayed on to do postgrad, and again connected with Kepa through my PhD, which is in water sensitive urban design. I was looking at the hydrologic impact of living roofs or green roofs in the Auckland context, Tāmaki context. But what we did was through one chapter of that research, kind of weave in whakaaro around te ao Māori and low impact design, as it was at the time. We go through many acronyms. And that really started, I think, the cogs turning in my mind around the way I wanted to practice, because I was already leaning really heavily through undergrad, which is why I stepped into the PhD, into these concepts of different ways of working with water, green infrastructure, water sensitive design, working with our whenua, with our wai, rather than pipes and traditional paradigms of water management. So you could kind of see all the parallels in it, and it was myself learning about it and then finding enough comfort to lean into it a bit more. And I had peers along the way. You know, Troy's been a huge proponent of mine through my professional career and helping encourage me to lean into it, to step into it, and have a bit more comfort. And I guess over the years I've found a bit of comfort in, similar to what we discussed at the start, you know, if I'm not doing this, who is? Because there's relatively few Māori in our sector. So even if I have a level of discomfort, if I can make space and make room and provide discomfort to others to actually look at changing practice, I can just hold room for those coming through, you know, like as we grow in number in our industry, we grow in confidence, as we get better supports through, hopefully, regulatory mechanisms, there's room made, there's already the doors open. Just let others through to come and be louder voices too.
So. Oh yeah, far out. I'm really curious to understand let's hone in on the chapter in your PhD with whakaaro Māori within living roofs or green roofs. So the things that I don't know. For those listening who may not even know what living or green roofs in, can we start there? And then kind of understanding your learnings within that space, because I'm genuinely really interested.
So starting position, living roofs or green roofs are vegetated rooftops. And honestly, when I first started the research space and learning about them, we were using the language green roofs. And we would take people up onto the rooftop. I had a research roof at the University of Auckland. It still exists. Well, I think the Faculty of Engineering are looking at trying to kick off again with some additional monitoring. And there's new monitoring going on in relation to a living roof on the Auckland Library as well. That's an aside though. When we took people up to see our roof, they were like, it's not green. I was like, huh. Language matters, you know, like we know that, but some people were literally expecting a green roof, as in not even connecting the green to elements of vegetation and greenery, and others, even though we had planted, you know, vegetated rooftop,
A lot of it was in grasses, succulents, sedum was a really common. They weren't all green in colour. They don't always look lush. It's not like a traditional English garden and lawns and the like. It's, you know, tailored to quite a harsh environment. And so people were like, oh, it doesn't look very healthy. And so that's when we started using the language of living roof more okay. so. It's living in also the biota, the biodiversity, invertebrates, birds, bird life, you know, our bees. So there's a lot of life to it that's way beyond my level of knowledge. So living roofs had been extensively studied overseas, but we didn't really have local place-based data. And so that was the purpose of my research. I come from a water engineering background, and so I was looking primarily at the hydrology, but there's so much other research around biodiversity benefits, you know, urban heat island effect benefits, insulative properties for buildings, so energy efficiency. There's lots of other areas of benefit, but I was focusing on the water management and their ability to act like a sponge on the rooftop, basically, to capture that regularly occurring rainfall, absorb it in and use it to evapotranspire back into the environment. So kind of restoring an element of our water cycle, Te Huringa Wai, that's not effective when you cover our landscape and hard surfaces like roofs and paving. Mm-hmm. So that was the element of green infrastructure, as it's often referred to now, or nature-based solutions. There's lots of terminology and language coming around, but it's one of those tools that we can use to try and mimic our natural water cycle more effectively in urban spaces that are normally dominated by hard and hot surfaces as well, becoming more and more impactful as we experience, you know, this climate emergency. So that's the living roof part. Hopefully. Does that make sense? Can you realize what I'm talking about? Yeah,
no, absolutely. And I think it is going back to your comment about working with the water and realizing that it is people and people's decisions that have these hard surfaces. And even though we've got little gutter systems that go down, like, the water's still got to go somewhere, and it's understanding where it can go. And if we can keep it out of the network within the living roof space, then, and yeah, like you said, and all these other positive externalities that come with it, it can only be good.
Yeah.
Through working with their why.
It's the cumulative impact that can be of benefit. You know, one living roof in a sea of corrugated iron or concrete isn't necessarily going to make a huge difference, but cumulatively, I think the term that's being really commonly used now and is perhaps more accessible is around sponge cities, cities that can absorb our water, they can slow it down. And I guess living roofs are one component that can contribute to that sponge city approach. And you're not going to have a rooftop that holds back a massive inundation, like a flood event. But it can take the first portion of that, store it, slow it down, and have positive impact. You know, they're not flood mitigation devices individually, but cumulatively across a landscape by slowing down the water. You know, at the moment when we have hard surfaces, rainfall hits them, our traditional design paradigm has been to be hydraulically efficient. You know, you capture it, you move it away from people as quickly as possible, but where you move it away to is then inundated with the effects of flooding because of fast moving water in a short time arriving all at the same place. So by slowing it down and having these, you know, spongy cities, we can help mitigate those effects. I'm sure there's people who can explain it more eloquently, but that's kind of how I picture it and what that contribution of research is, and how we can integrate it into our built form. It's hard here. There's not huge uptake. We've got a lot of, you know, lightweight timber housing. We don't have snow loads. We don't have the structural kind of integrity already factored into our typical designs. But I think there's a growing appetite. And with multi-story buildings that already have quite high structural integrity, then the additional cost associated with it can be counted to some degree. And we've got an enabling, at least in Tāmaki, an enabling planning framework where it doesn't count as impervious surface. So you can work around your surface coverages. They can contribute positively to being able to increase your built area, for example. I don't know. I'm a massive, I just love to see more and more of them out there, and there is growing appetite. And you know, there's all the health and well-being elements, particularly in urban spaces. You know, if you can visually look out to greenery, you know, there's scientific data demonstrating contribution to water, especially around your tahiningaro, you know, like mental health and well-being through greenery. So we can utilize roof spaces to do that are often poorly utilized, you know, spaces. And so how did that connect to my Te Ao Māori story and the chapter of my PhD? It was actually quite a big, I guess, learning curve for me to try and relate it together. I had been doing, you know, papers, learning from Kepa throughout my undergrad degree. So it wasn't like it was entirely new, but trying to craft those thoughts and really connect with them. So he had published work and shared his example of his papakāinga and the use of narrow road corridors, surface runoff disconnected systems. So instead of plugging roofs and curbs into pipes and piping it away quickly, allowing time for water to flow over the surface to infiltrate. So he had all of these examples that had been constructed. I think I might have some facts wrong, so I don't want to go too far. My memory's not that good, but constructed in the 80s, like well before, considerably before low impact design, as it was called then, became this brand new innovative way of practice. So what the starting journey of that chapter in my PhD, what that was doing in my mind, connecting some dots, was saying, here's Mātauranga Māori that has developed through, you know, generations of lived experience and connection as a one piece of our broader te ao, of our, you know, whakapapa connection to environment. You know, we're not in dominion over, we're living in harmony with and respect of our te ao. Connecting those thoughts to how do we design to enable, you know, development and human occupation and recreation in our spaces, in our urban spaces, to still honor environment and try and minimize the impact on the water cycle in particular, and by extension our biodiversity and ecology. And so it was starting to connect those dots. And the Living Roof one, we were trying to connect with whakaaro around you know, how passing water through papatuanuku, that infiltration process is Māori enhancing, restorative, but also provides those water quality benefits. We were trying to link those sorts of thoughts into the Living Roof construct, where you actually have vegetation, a substrate, not soil per se, it's a lightweight, you know, typically a lightweight engineered substrate, but still comprising, you know, natural aggregate and organics, linking that to the benefits of passing water back to papatuanuku. So that was kind of the journey we went on, both recognizing this wealth of knowledge coming from Te Ao Māori and then trying to apply it in a way that aligned with these new and innovative practices around low impact design. And that's still what I'm trying to do in my mind, and that's the piece of work I've most recently been involved in around Te Ao Māori and water sensitive urban design, through a National Science Challenge research project that I co-authored again with Troy Brockbank. And so it's an ongoing journey, but that was the starting step. And I kind of wrapped it into a piece of my PhD, realized I didn't want to be a full-time academic. I wanted to go out into the world and try and apply my knowledge. So that was when I moved into consulting. And then it kind of sat to the side for a period of time as I tried to engineer, you know, grow as a professional, come out of a PhD into an, you know, incredibly practical based career pathway. So being an academic isn't necessarily highly valued because you can be perceived as being impractical and theoretical, and grow my profession there. And so it started to come back in project work through my career. And I was enabled by that in the projects that I was invited to be involved in as well.
You were saying going into the practical, quote unquote engineer role, whatever that actually means. What has your career path been?
First submitted and finished my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
My partner at the time, husband now, was he had just gone overseas to play rugby. And so I had a sweet deal where I got to go over and have a little holiday after I submitted my PhD. And in that time, I'm not naturally inclined to doing nothing with my brain for long periods of time. And so I was doing like research assistant type role. Timed it perfectly. I handed in my thesis and I jumped on the plane to the south of France. But that remains, you know, dreamy for a period of time, and then it's like, okay, my brain's going stale. So I was doing some research work back for Uni Services, wrapping in parts of my PhD work with my supervisor, Dr. Elizabeth Fassman, and Dr. Robin Simcock, you know, wrapping in some of the work we'd done into technical reports. There were Auckland Council was producing design guidelines for living roofs. There were various other elements going on. There was one around the way we understood hydrology and the impact of small storms. So I still got to dabble a little bit in research, and my PhD had been funded through what was at the time Auckland Regional Council. They had a stormwater action team, I think it was called. So I still had I had relationships with the council. So when we came back to New Zealand, I ended up going and working at the council in like a temporary role, again working on guideline documents and technical reports, kind of leaning a little bit into still that academic sense, but how to wrap those up and package them into documents that could support the actual implementation of some of those research outcomes in whakaaro. And then I ended up going and working for a company called Morpham. Realized I wanted to be a consultant, fired off emails to a whole bunch of companies that I thought I might like to work for. And fortunately, the guys there said, hey, we might like you to work for us. And that was amazing. You know, really values aligned, really great culture fit. They were working in the realm of the alignment between science and engineering. And so that's really shaped my, you know, career. I was there for 6 years as an environmental engineer, really focusing in water and being able to lean into my interest in water sensitive urban design. Being a regular attendee of like the water conferences and creating the networks that I have and meeting and sharing knowledge with others. So that was really neat. And then after that, my business partner, Jack, he and I met at university, so we studied engineering together, kind of took off on our own individual career pathways, but kept on playing ultimate frisbee together. So had that friendship and relationship throughout that. And so he started Tectus, and he started it in 2015, and then wanted someone to help share the load, bounce ideas, take the reins when he needed a holiday, you know, all that comes with being able to share decision making. And he invited me in to join Tectus in 2018. So I made the leap from Morpham to Tectus then. And part of the real appeal there, because, you know, Morphem was already incredibly values aligned, was that that's exactly what we were able to create with Tectus. Jack and I, you know, he had crafted values for the company that I inherently believed in. And we've been able to grow the company together since then. And the neat part, and which I'm really appreciative of, is that I shape the way I practice as an engineer through Te Ao Māori, Mātauranga Māori, as I find out what that means to myself personally and professionally. Are in the waka, right? Like, we're all learning and growing, but it's incredibly exciting to be able to help chart that course and do it in partnership with someone who really believes in the vision too.
Oh, beautiful. Kōrā here. Sorry, I'm looking out the window, and it's very fitting to the kōrero that we're having. It's just started belting down, actually, with rain here in Pōneke, so if only there were living roofs on all the roofs that I can see. You're saying you were able to lead into, paraphrasing here, but what it means to be kind of an engineer and also lead in to Te Ao Māori and your own kind of connection. What does that look like so far? And I know it's a journey. What has that looked like?
I'm trying to figure out what order it went to. I feel like I've just jammed it all in together at the same time. But I think it started off with me making the leap, strongly encouraged by Troy, I might add, to go to Kurapō and start to reclaim my reo. I feel like that is actually, they've kind of gone hand in hand. We had, this is not a linear story, sorry. I was just reflecting. I had projects, for example, at Morphem that were using Kepa's Modi model as a Modi-based evaluation framework and optioneering tool. And so connecting with applying and, you know, applying the practices of wānanga, whanaungatanga, connecting with ignited two things, a sense of not being enough, but also a passion to do something about it. Probably end up as two quite high standards. And I felt like I wasn't doing the work justice for myself, but that came with all those identity issues around, you know, being adopted, having an amazing family, not wanting to jeopardize that, but also wanting to know who I am and what it means to be myself in all of my identity. And so I went to night school and started learning reo. And then the first thing you learn is pepeha, which I didn't have. And so that was what started the pathway of kimihia rangahawa, you know, like research into who I am. How could I find that? How could I connect with that? Because that's the first step. That was like week one, pepeha. It's like, oh, yeah, no, mine's, it's complicated. To work with Māori in my mahi already, and then wanting to connect with that more personally. And then through the acquisition of language and culture and tikanga, realizing I really want this to be, I want this part of me to also be who I am at work.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I do that? Probably reflective of how complicated and multi-directional. My course of travel has been in shaping how I work and who I am and how I express that to others and how comfortable I am standing up and saying I'm a Māori engineer, I'm Wahine Māori versus I'm a stormwater specialist. You know, there's all these, you know, PhD, there's all these real traditional concepts of what it is to be successful, but then moving into projects where I'm trying to celebrate and whenua and why that have different
it's like I don't know, say okay, I did this and I did this and I did this and I got this and therefore I am, whereas being Māori, I whakapapa is the only thing that you need, standing tall with being Māori, that's different for every single person, and it's different for every person at different times of them as well. Do you think that has elements to do with it as well? And then now there's a bigger corridor about how do we show up as Māori within the engineering industry, where it's so set as you know what you are because you've done all this before, and now there's a growing number of Māori within the engineering industry, which is amazing, and now it's just navigating and figuring out what that actually means and connecting into people who may not know and may not understand and may not like, and making room, like you said, for others coming through. But I think it's a completely beautiful answer you've had, because it is representative to the challenges and the kind of internal conflicts, but then also because it feels more than that. But that also lie within this whole sense of space and time that we're in at the moment.
It's definitely that. And what's been really valuable, I think, is and our peers, our Māori peers in our sector, but also through my various different kurapō night school classes that I've been to, connecting with Māori in those spaces and realizing I guess that we need to have some compassion for ourselves, you know, like that everyone comes in with different challenges, mamai, you know, intergenerational kōrero around language and culture and loss and growth as well, you know, there's real optimism as well, but I think that's been quite enlightening for me, because you can go into a room and have judgments on someone like, oh my god, they're like tino Māori, you know, like, oh god, and then you have over kai and through that whakawhanaungatanga, and then realize that they've got just as many insecurities about it, even if their ills, you know, their pronunciation is perfect or their vocab is huge. There's all these other things going on. And I think that's been really helpful for me, that process of just going and trying to learn and connecting with other Māori in the same place, to realize, oh, heck, I'll just take the space up in our industry because I have platforms in which I can, you know, I'm a business owner. I've been in the industry long enough as a professional that I have peers, and I might as well use them to the best of my advantage, even if it's not quite always with as much confidence as I project.
Exactly. And I think there is definitely like, I think it comes up in a lot of episodes about how small the industry is and how interconnected it is in relationship. Very important to just say with that statement that it is a small industry and enough to connect with each other. And I think it is definitely using different platforms and spaces, which leads on to kind of a part around your governance journey and the governance spaces that you're in. So like you said, ACE New Zealand. Any and all for Carl on that.
Yeah. I do have one reflection just before I jump into that, because I was thinking of my aspirations for ourselves as engineers and Māori in engineering. And I know there's so much happening and there's so many people doing things, which is awesome. But I had in a couple of my classes for Reo quite a few lawyers, and they have, I think, maybe the benefit of time, but amazing connectivity, you know, like waiata, wānanga conferences for the law profession. I can't remember the names of any of these societies, but I would love for us to be able to reach that point. You know, I see things pop up in various socials around attending the, you know, with collectives of Māori and the legal professions, and I'm like, oh, if we can get to that, that'd be really something to celebrate.
I think that's a far-fetched plan, goal, dream, either.
And I think what Engineering NZ have been doing around our kōrero riro and, you know, ourselves as peers coming together and trying to activate change, I think it's happening. I really do. I'm so optimistic. Even though we're all kind of stretched and wearing multiple hats, and there's others who are really putting in the legwork, I'm trying to contribute as best I can. But I don't think it's far-fetched either, and I think it will only grow because there's so many more coming through, you know, graduating and coming through into the sector. We just need to make sure all of our places of work are safe spaces and uplift it and encourage it and hold on to everyone in the sector. But my governance journey, it turns out I really enjoy it. And I wasn't sure. It was a classic scenario of, I'm not going to put my, you know, someone was suggested I put my hat in the ring. I was like, no, because I don't have enough experience. I haven't done it before. I don't know what I'm doing. All those same things. But I met with Helen, the CE, and with Kainwin, who's now currently president and at the time on the board, and a couple of other peers I knew in governance roles to have a chat. And I was like, okay. Well, put my hat in the ring, probably won't make it. There's a different issue. Nobody, I was like, I don't want to put my hat in the ring and then not be successful. How embarrassing. I'm like, that's just foolish thoughts. And stepped into the space. And I think what's been amazing is the experience of governors already in that space and the willingness to share knowledge and understand what it means to be looking at that real strategic kind of space. I think I've been so heavily influenced by operationally doing the do. Like, I've actually learned a lot through my ACE experience to the benefit of Tectus, which I hadn't. Right. That's probably naive on my part, but that's what happens when you get an engineer who turns into a business leader without any real business experience. I guess it's a common story, and I think one ACE are working towards around supporting SMEs like myself, small to medium enterprises, like Tectus and our peers. So I think it's been fantastic, but also comes with that same having to find, I guess, boundaries of what I'm comfortable to help guide in respect of Māori outcomes in a governance space versus what is beyond my capability. I think that can be one of the challenges, I think, as in industries like ourselves that don't have high representation.
Yeah.
What's within my remit to comment on where I say, actually, this is where we need to get the support of others, or we need to get education or training, or we need to partner, we need to talk actually to our iwi and hapu Māori. So it's like trying to navigate that when I'm still by no means an authority on the matter, you know?
Yeah, for sure. What keeps you grounded in all of that?
That's a good question.
the support networks, I think I'm really fortunate in the board that I'm involved in and that they're really experienced and accessible, you know, like for a kōrero, for those offline chats. Also talking with peers who have similar experience, you know, I've had some good chats with Troy, who's got multiple governance roles with Whare Huia and Engineering NZ. You know, there's a few others around I can reach to for support. And I think part of it is I will normally, even if it's a silly question or if it might not be quite, if it's a bit of a tangent, I'll just pipe up with my questions or comments anyway. Rather than, I think that's been perhaps one of the benefits of moving into that space, having been practicing for some time. I'll just chuck the questions out there, so I don't feel like I'd ask that. I normally just go for it. Whether or not that is frustrating for others, I think it's that element of I am who I am. And if I don't understand something, I can't really move past that. So maybe it's not grounding, but it gives some confidence of being in the space that I haven't just been letting things kind of wash over if I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's not, like, that's definitely something I'm learning as well, like having the confidence to, I know they always say ask the stupid questions, but you never actually want to. I think when you don't have like the whole confidence piece. So
yes, what is your experience there? I was gonna say you're asking me, but
yeah, similar. Gosh, you're saying that, yeah, I with like so big learning curve, and I think it is that muscle I'm still kind of flexing within myself of asking the silly questions when you don't know, especially the kōrero that happens at that level within the organization. In terms of, yeah, because when I noted down the parts of what keeps you grounded, it kind of also made me reflect on what keeps me grounded within Te Aorangaho Engineering New Zealand space. And it's just about when I move on from positions in the governance space, I'm not going to be the last person that represents what I do within that space in itself, like to the industry or the organization. So yeah, it's tricky. It's real tricky, and definitely agree with you in terms of leaning into and connecting in with people who do have similar experiences, because it's definitely sometimes a scary space, but also really, it is fun. I think it's really awesome to be able to be privy to that level of input, I think, yes, which is cool. Like, what a privilege that is. That's, yeah.
Right. And that's partly what I love about it. And I think what I've also loved about the freedom of working with Jack at Tectus, you are charting the course and you're setting the North Star. Right? Like, here I have to pai tawhiti, you know, what's the horizon that we're looking to? What's our North Star? Te pai rangi, what are we looking to? And when you're caught up in the, you know, it's always like, oh, mahi a te mahi. Like, if you're caught up in the do, you don't always have time or make time to look at where you're going. And what if you're busy beavering away, heading in entirely the wrong direction? And so I think there's governance roles and opportunities in those spaces are real reflective, personally for Tectus, but obviously also for the industry as a whole. But that's the nature of being in an industry board. Part of the lens I bring is I tell Māori to the best of my knowledge, but also as a small business owner, the challenges we face, also as a woman in a business leadership role. You know, like, there's lots of different lenses that I can apply to support that board role that actually also double right back as a, you know, I'm contributing some time, but I'm getting so much in return. Sometimes I feel almost disproportionately what the lessons and opportunities and relationships I've gained through it potentially outweigh my contributions, but I'll leave others to judge that. But I also did, because I'm quite, you know, I've always been quite academic. And so what I did do, it's such a boring answer, but I legitimately joined the Institute of Directors, did some training courses, did some lessons, like what are the essentials of governance? And it's that's something, and I think it talks, you know, it reverts to your earlier comment, you know, I'm an engineer because I did an engineering degree and I've been practicing. I think maybe that's a trained, you know, I've been a trained way of thinking, but it helps me feel a bit more confident in those spaces to go, I did the course. And whether or not that's right, that's the way my brain has been trained through many years of traditional education. Oh, you know, I was at university for 9.
Yeah. Fair enough. Ugh. Actually, to, I don't know, the idea of getting this thing, and then therefore you are, which is by no means bad. Like, I don't know, I just wanted to put that disclaimer there. In Aotearoa, so the stat of having only 1% of the CPN professionals in 2021 were Māori and Pacifica, who has been through, but more so like, sure. How's your feelings around that? Like, is that something that's surprising to you? Is that something that, what can?
Oh, it is disappointing, obviously. I guess that statistic is even lower than our representation in the industry as a whole, right? I was having a great conversation earlier in the week around STEM, trying to, you know, students are making up their minds to exclude subjects quite early on. So how do we make STEM enticing at a young age? So I know there's all that pipeline work and there's so much amazing work being done to try and uplift STEM with Māori and Pacifica especially, to feed the pipeline so we can train them into engineers, and with my own personal bias into the water sector. For myself, my ended up being largely things off. Like that sounds like I shouldn't really say that. But it hadn't been an essential tool needed to practice and to feel like I was practicing effectively. I think that is changing with the perception of the public, with some of the challenges we've faced with people perhaps not doing high quality work. So I think that's really changing regardless.
That's why I wanted to ask. But yeah, and it is multi-layered, and it is, like you said, representative of that stat of within the actual industry in itself.
I asked, do you know how much lower that is than our representation in the industry? In my mind, and I think this is from the diversity agenda statistics, Māori and Pacifica are like 3 or 4% of our industry. Like, it's already really low, and representation in CPNG is even lower. But I was just reflecting now, is that a nature of the youthfulness of our population as well? Like, it could be, sorry, this is not a good chat. I'm just absolutely like mulling now. You've got me mulling.
Yeah, no, me too. yeah, I don't know. It is it's a big part.
And I was reflecting as well, because administratively, going for accreditations like that require the time to put aside and reflect on all of your work experience, wrap it up into a package, respond to the competencies and ethics and all of these good things. And, you know, we were chatting previously around how many hats we're each wearing and what mahi we have going on. And then you've also got life and whānau outside of that. I honestly wonder if sometimes people and our Māori peers in the sector, it could be an element of that. You know, what's the value to then create another bracket of time when you're already wearing so many hats and fulfilling and chasing and responding to so many kaupapa? Honestly, because that, you know, Jack and I went through our CPNG pathway at the same time and just had to like lock time in together, to hold each other to account, to say we are going to do this because we need it. It is for our personal benefit, it is for the benefit of our company. You know, it was quite a targeted, we are going to do this now, and then we still had to hold each other to account. And in saying that, I actually do really value it now, but that was a flipped switch to get to. It's a good question.
Yeah, even hearing kind of one of the reasons why you went for it is interesting in and of itself. Question, and something that no one person, just like anything in terms of creating a stat like this, it's good that it's recorded, but it's, so we can measure it, but it's also.
So that's the thing now. Now I want to hear the stories around it. That's the problem with stats. Great. Like, I'm obviously all for numbers. Love me a good spreadsheet, all that sort of stuff. But, the quarter or the stories, you know, what is it? That's what I'm keen to hear. Cause I was like, reflecting on it even myself, it's not a great story, but it is what it is. You know, like I was practicing quite successfully as a water engineer, without CPNG. Then the tide started to turn around client expectation, around, I guess comparing yourself to others, and if someone's CPNG and they're being perceived as doing higher quality work than you, part of it was I do equally as good work, so I need to be CPNG as well. You know, things like that. There's all these little layers upon layers that were my story for why I ended up making the time to sit down and apply. You know, I'm going to be going for reaccreditation. I can't quite remember the right word, shortly. So that'll be the same thing. You know, now that I have it, I want to hold it, but I'm going to have to find time to do that, and it'll be valuable. And actually, honestly, did find it quite a valuable process to reflect on what I had done. I think we're always chasing the workload, chasing the next thing. Sometimes it's good to stop and reflect on actually what you have achieved and the complexity. You know, that's a key part of it, right? Complex engineering solutions and framing problems to be able to solve them in the most effective way for our clients, but also in terms of the outcomes that we're trying to achieve. It's quite a good reflection because there's some, you know, we each work in some really complex spaces, and we perhaps get bogged down in the just trying to get it done. You know, there's budget, time, quality, all these things that you're chasing in a professional sense. To reflect on it as your personal contribution can be quite rewarding too.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do it that often. I don't think we probably don't do it enough.
Yeah, that's a beautiful perspective on it, actually. It is definitely a forced reflection time, you see. Yeah, it is important. So we've looked, and so CPN just forced us to look back. This is my good segue into the next part. So what excites you when we look forward?
Nice, lovely segue.
Thank you.
I didn't make it easy for you, sorry. I'm not going to lie. In this current point of time of political, change and turmoil and uncertainty, this big grey area, there's also some apprehension because having a lack of clarity is uncomfortable. Wherever the chips fall, we'll respond and be purpose-driven and values-led. And so I'm optimistic irrespective. And actually what I'm really optimistic about is chatting with most recently down at the Water Conference and also at the ACE Conference before that, actually. The appetite amongst peers as professionals to lean into concepts, whakaaro paradigms like mana o te wai, to actually deliver as professionals what's right and respect the fact that something like mana o te wai is good for everyone. It's around, you know, healthy places to live, be, recreate, have our, time with our whānau. And I think that was exciting to feel like the industry was leaning into purpose-led. You know, even all of this stuff around
the flood response and flood recovery work and trying to remove people from living in places where they're vulnerable to risk that's only going to worsen with the impacts of climate. So I guess I'm optimistic that, you know, peers in the sector are amazing and forward-looking and aspirational around transformation. How that lands on the ground, we'll see. But I think that was an element of optimism, because in this time of uncertainty, I think, was the conference directly the week after the election?
With the Tuesday I started?
Yeah, it was. And there was still positivity through uncertainty. I think what's helping drive it is the expectations of not only iwi Māori, but our communities for, you know, further degradation of our waterways, of our taiao being unacceptable. You know, there's this whole cohort of rangatahi coming through where status quo is just not an acceptable outcome, and that fills me with optimism too. Because, you know, like, blue sky thinking from myself is always going to be influenced by my educational pathway, the paradigms I've been working in. So my blue sky thinking possibly has more boundaries and limitations to it than some of those coming through who haven't had that same pathway, who have had different knowledge forms shared, who have had a stronger presence of reo and tikanga through their own education system. You know, like, it feels like I'm looking forward and feeling optimistic, and then there's people coming through looking beyond where I'm at, and that's exciting. You know, it's cool. It's a bit vague and fluffy, but that's how I feel about it.
Well, that's your North Star, even, hey?
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that I've been able to, you know, through the last few years, connecting with amazing practitioners, with kaitiaki, you know, living, implementing what it really means to work for Papa Tuanuku, work for our way, you know, not constrained by, oh, but we need to make this yield or this profit or this outcome. You know, that's been an exposure through my work stream that has only helped solidify the way I want to practice as a professional. Even if it's a bit like, now how do I find the work I really want? You know, like there's also, you know, there's got to be a lot said for, you need to have a good understanding of networks and of pipe systems. They're going to be present, but how do we look at the and? And we're going to create social spaces, and we're going to do it in partnership with our mana whenua and truly respond to their obligations, their whakapapa obligations to this whenua. You know, there's the and. It's not it's layering up all of these elements. And even just little things, like I've been in so many more spaces where the mahi I'm doing as an engineer is actually, in a true collaborative sense, connecting with urban design, landscape and amenity, connecting with the regulatory framework, connecting with other professionals. And I think that's the hardest part, right? We talk about it a lot around breaking down silos, but I think from my experience, it feels like there's more opportunities where the project spaces we're in and perhaps some of the clients we're working with are enabling that, recognizing the need for us is to come together as professionals to do that blank page constraints and opportunities mapping type stuff, listen to the kōrero of the space, understand the relationships that already exist, before we go. Now we're going to design the thing. You know, like it feels like some of our practices are changing, and it might just be the luxury I've had of moving into some different project spaces and working in different elements. But it helps keeps you know, the cup full when you're trying to juggle too many hats.
Important, very important. moment industry that we're in, and for us it feels like it's in a good way and a good change. What would you say to those who are coming through, who are coming into the engineering industry, and yeah, what would you say to them?
What would I say? Engineering sector to bring themselves fully to the space and have confidence in who they are and their ability to make change. There's so much flux, I think, in, you know, regulatory reforms, water reforms, and it's not continuing, right? Like, irrespective of where we end up in terms of change, there will be change onto those changes, irrespective of how long they've been working in the sector. So to feel valid in their opinions and their innovations, I think that's probably one of the hardest parts when you come through a workforce that has traditionally been quite hierarchical. I don't know, is that the word? You know, with strong hierarchy, to feel and that you're not entitled to a voice. I think that's changing, because what we're seeing is we are responding to transformation and new expectation. And so we need new minds and innovative minds who haven't been already shaped by business as usual. So I guess that's a lecture. So the short version would be to stay true to themselves coming into the industry and not separate their personal self from their professional self, in terms of values and vision.
There is pushback, and there is still amazing other people who may not be in the same mindset as those who are pushing back at you. And I think that that's kind of what relationships in the industry, like, that's something I bloody love about it, because not everyone's going to think the same. And not everyone's going to think the same power that we share on this podcast.
You'll be valued somewhere else. You know, like, there's so much opportunity for in our industry. If you're being undervalued or diminished, if your workplace is diminishing your mana or your sense of worth, then don't move out of the industry. Within the industry to somewhere.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm losing it.
Yeah. No, we love it. It's a Friday Arvo, Epifana. It's a vibe. Beautiful. I really appreciate that. Yeah. Shall we end it there, Uhua? Do you have anything else?
No, this is an amazing kaupapa on top of your day-to-day mahi. And I love the kōrero that you've shared from others and that others have shared with this podcast. We've talked about me coming to join you for a while. It's I was really nervous. I know I tend to say silly things sometimes, and having them recorded in perpetuity is not necessarily ideal. But just an immense tautoko of this mahi that you do. And the fact that it's been growing as a kaupapa, and you've been able to share the voices of, you know, Māori in our sector, and try and encourage and inspire, I guess, in any way that we can, and share the challenges alongside the positives. You know, like, that's, I think that's what makes it. Having people's authentic stories, I've really valued. So I just want to tautoko the mahi that you're doing here and those that are supporting you. So
I mihi atu ana ki a koe mō te whakaohooho, because almost 3 years ago now, people that I really wanted to talk to about doing something down at UC, and you were like, yeah, something that's really sucked me, if I don't do it, who else will, kind of vibe, any of that. So I hope you realize that these stories have come from you as well, in a roundabout way. So ai, ngā mihi nunui ki a koe. I think it is definitely an important part of this kaupapa. Ai, she stuff out of the way. Time today and all the time that you've spent. Yeah, this side of you as well.
Yeah. There's so much. It's all interconnected. So I think I've really enjoyed it too.
Alrighty, shall we close? Me karakia taua. Unihi ki tūru tapanui, ki a wātea, ki a māma, ki nākau te tēnana, te wairua I te arataka tā, koia rā I rongo, whakaere ake ki runga, tuturu whakamaa ki a teina. Haumie, huie, tā, ki e.